Come back. So by way of introduction, I'm Yvonne, and I've been visiting teacher in Howie's group for too many years to count, a long time. And it's always a wonderful, wonderful thing to be back. I can't help but notice that I probably have a very similar experience to you when I sit down on the cushion here. The first few minutes are dizzying with all of the flurry of everything that has been going on in my mind and my body and around me for the day. And then when I settle into my cushion, I begin to experience the truth of what it means to take refuge in the practice. Because I can feel my mind agitating more for a moment, but then beginning to settle itself in to a calmer place, my body being in touch with the places that I collect stress, contraction. Slowly, as the hour moves on, either it gets worse or it melts away. Or someplace in between, as they say, this is the middle path. So it is truly an experience of being able to take refuge in this moment, which is a kind of indulgence. I like to call it an indulgence. I know that we call it a discipline. And sometimes my fear is that when people come into sitting, they're concerned about, are they doing it right? Are they going to be good sitters? Are they going to get the experience that is appropriate? And the overlay of this lifelong conditioning to worry about whether we're okay as we are. So during my sitting, it just automatically popped in. I reflected on an experience that I had, 25, 26 years ago. Some colleagues and I took a bunch of people to Japan, and we wanted to give them the experience of Japan as a cultural and spiritual tour, ending with a 10-day session, because we were in a Zen Buddhist temple, although we fundamentally practice Vipassana, just traditional mindfulness. In Kyushu, the southernmost island of Japan, in a town called Beppu, which reminded me a lot of Sonoma County. Beppu is an island, and as you approach it by ferry, you can see all the steam vents from all the sulfur baths and coffee baths, and you could, you know, in a way you could soak into anything as long as it was warm and somewhat fluid. And there was an amplitude of those opportunities all through this island. So it was considered a healing island where people went to cure themselves of their ills. And we stayed in a 17th century temple called Choshoji. And we were hosted by the son of the priest and his wife at this temple. And it was, as is the tradition in Japan, it was a community temple. So it oversaw all of the flock, so to speak, of the hood, of the neighborhood. And the father was in his 90s, and the wife was close to the same age. And very, very interesting strain in their family, in their genetics. The men of that family, at a certain point in their early 40s, started going blind. So by the time that they were 70, 80, 90, they were pretty completely blind. And this was true of the 90-year-old father and Ryuho, who was our host and the son of the priest, was also beginning to go blind. As interesting as that was, it was deeply, effectively moving at the end of our 10 days to be all lined up, all 27 of us, in front of this long table covered with a white cloth, and behind it sat the priest and his wife, who was always beside him because he couldn't see. And this is where her wifely duty took her at the end of their lives. And in front of him was a stack of white paper, beautiful, large paper, and a brush and an ink and a place to put the black ink into water so that it could be just the right consistency, so that he could do his mastery. He was a sumo master. And so there we were, lined up with this man who had been blind for over 40 years, and he was going to demonstrate to us individually his sumo, in the sense that he was going to make a liberating design that represented the characters, that expressed a poem that was uniquely expressive to who we were as individuals, even though he couldn't see us, but he could feel us. And we got to stand in front of him one by one as he did this sumo, and we witnessed it, and he gave it to each of us. I have that in my house. It's one of my most treasured and remarkable pieces. And I watched him do the strokes. There were two bold strokes. And then there was this kind of watery strokes that were manifold on the side of it, which expressed what these two images meant. And then there was also his signature. This was all done unhesitatingly, beautifully, smoothly. And saying that he did for me was two characters, and the two characters represented the first demonstration and the second one, the flower. So it came up in my mind as I was meditating that, what did it mean? This is a famous saying during the Buddha's lifetime, that somebody asked, just as he was sitting, like we are sitting here today, I'm not the Buddha. We are all the Buddha. Somebody asked, so Buddha, what is liberation? And somebody had brought some bouquet of flowers, and he took one of the flowers out of the vase, and he presented the flower. That was his answer to that question. And over the 2,600 years that this has been part of the Buddha Dharma, people have philosophized, speculated, what did this mean? So pure, so simple, so deep, but what does it mean? And so every time that I've reflected on it, I've come up with a different shade of meaning. I'm sure even as you are listening to this, you're coming up with what it could mean as wisely as anybody has ever interpreted that wonderful response. But for my experience, as I was sitting here today with you, it dawned on me that it meant that liberation is natural. The flower is a natural being. Its beauty is self-evident. And its being is unquestioned. So I thought, you know, as we sit here, we want to be good sitters, we want to be good people, we want to be good mothers, good daughters, good sons, good whatevers, fill in the blank. It's a wonderful, wonderful time to remind ourselves of the basic truth of that saying that came supposedly directly from the Buddha, addressing the essential issue that we practice around, which is liberation. What is this liberation? When are we going to get it? What is it going to feel like when we have it? How can we recognize it in others? Why do we want it anyway? So I was thinking, you know, that's just part of how we don't appreciate the essential naturalness of who we are. How we don't glorify.